We're going to go ahead and get started now. The other person's finally arrived. Entertain a motion to have a recess to a public hearing.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Hudson.
Second.
Second, Mr. Schaefer. Any questions? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
All right, we have now back in regular session. Judge Oliver.
Good morning, everyone. Again, Mr. Bartley is now here. Mr. Moore has a statement.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. You'll notice that I started to call you Mr. President. I'm so used to saying that automatically. I would have given you a promotion, I guess. You'll notice that Mr. Riley is not here this morning. In spite of the lack of any prior involvement, consideration, conclusion, and or predetermination of the merits of the Coral Lakes 2 appeal in any form or fashion, he wanted to avoid any appearance to the contrary to the citizens of Sussex County and in deference to any possible concerns of the parties. He has thus decided to recuse himself from any involvement in the Coral Lakes 2 appeal that might have resulted from an interview in a public forum podcast earlier this past summer posted on social media. That interview referenced the existence of the Coral Lakes subdivision process. In addition, he wanted me to affirmatively state that he has not discussed the matter of the Coral Lakes 2 appeal in any form or fashion with any other members of the Sussex County Council. He has recused himself voluntarily to preserve the integrity of the process and to erase even the appearance of impropriety. In light of that recusal, I wish to state for the record that I've also spoken to each member of council, and each has indicated to me that he or she has had no prior discussion, consideration, bias, or opinions of any kind form regarding the outcome or any other aspect of in this matter from the date this matter was remanded to the Planning and Zoning Commission on June 23rd, 2023. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, any preliminary matters from council? Mr. Bartley?
No, Your Honor.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you are aware, this is the appeal of the decision of the Planning and Zoning Commission in the Coral Lakes subdivision application number 2021-6. The appellees are Shell Brothers and the Planning and Zoning Commission, and the appellants are Mr. Bartley and the Hicks appellants represented by Mr. Met. Is it Met or Meta?
Meta.
I thought that's what it was. And Mr. Bartley, who's appearing pro se. We previously met by teleconference and discuss the submissions and the preliminary issues that have been resolved. The appellees filed their submissions on September 21 and the appellants on October 5. That's in addition to their notices of appeal. The procedure will be that each side proceeding with the Hicks appellants first shall be entitled to 30 minutes, and then there will be questions by counsel. No additional evidence will be allowed, and this is a proceeding on the record before the Planning and Zoning Commission. And again, this appeal results from the decision of the Planning and Zoning Commission on June 23rd, 2022, following the remand from this council on May 24, 2022. I am the hearing officer appointed by County Council Charles Tolliver, member of the Delaware Bar since 1975, I think. I can't remember. But my name is on the wall in the Supreme Court. I know I'm legitimate in that sense. And I also spent 24 years on the Superior Court of the state of Delaware. And I'm pleased to be once again in Sussex County. And I would also acknowledge that in response to my previously complaints about the seating, because I'm vertically challenged, they have amped up my chair and given me a pillow so you can see. And And I sincerely appreciate that because I never got that kind of consideration in Newcastle County, which says a lot from where I'm from. And with that, unless there is anything else from the members of council, we shall proceed with the hits and don'ts. Mr. Mayor.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, council members. Good morning. Thank you for your time this morning. My name is Luke Mehta. I'm with the law firm Armstrong Teasdale, and I represent the parties or the appellants who have been referred to as the Hicks appellants. That is specifically Jill Hicks, William Hicks, Susan Petsy Rosenblum, Sergey Babushko, and Carrie Russo. I'm going to refer to them as the Hicks appellants, if that's okay. Your Honor, I realize that you've set aside 30 minutes. You want both of these down or just?
You can slide the one over. Thank you.
30 minutes for argument. If I may, I would like to reserve some of my allotted 30 minutes for rebuttal.
So noted.
Our arguments on appeal were straightforward and simple. We argued that the record of the actual, candid, unscripted reasons given by the Planning and Zoning Commission members for their June 23rd vote demonstrated that the decision was not the result of an orderly and logical review of the evidence and applicable provisions of the subdivision ordinance, but rather the result of the commissioners voting the way their council told them or advised them to vote. We quoted the stated reasons given by the commissioners, three of which out of five are reflected on this slide, which on their face demonstrate that the reasons were not the result of the Planning and Zoning Commission's review or the commissioner's review of the evidence, certainly not an open session, and on its face, which demonstrates that it was not the result of the commissioner's review of the applicable provisions of the subdivision ordinance. Their council and Mr. Whitehouse may have made determinations of code compliance, but the commissioners simply acquiesced. We argued that the only record evidence of what changed from the prior denial of the shell application in March until its approval in June was the statements set forth on this slide and the obvious impact of council's advice and directions on the vote. And we also argue that the Planning and Zoning Commission failed to abide by this council's May 24 remand in two respects. The Planning and Zoning Commission did not consider the entire record, all evidence and facts of the application in open session. They simply did not do so. Certainly not in open session. The only thing that happened in open session was a hastily read verbal motion by counsel for the Planning Commission. The motion was immediately so moved, seconded, and voted on without any debate. There is no debate. There's no consideration in public session. We also argued the Planning and Zoning Commission did not issue a written decision that you required in your remand, did not issue a written decision containing the commission's findings and conclusions, which thereby precluded effective review again by you. Now, nothing, if you actually, their briefs are well written and they're long, but if you actually look at the briefs of the Planning and Zoning Commission and Shaw Brothers, both of whom are represented by fine individuals and fine lawyers, by the way, they don't really directly respond to any of the arguments that we make at all, not directly. They may engage in some evasive maneuvers, seeking to either muddy the record, which they cannot do, we submit under controlling Delaware law, and they try to convince you to avoid looking at what actually happened on June 23rd altogether by invoking arcane legal arguments such as standing and law of the case, which simply do not withstand scrutiny. So what was their direct response in their briefs to the actual reasons on this slide given by the commissioners for their June 23rd vote. They ran from the record. They ran from the record. They don't even quote the relevant highlighted section of Commissioner Stevenson. I was told our counsel says, we can't deny it. No mention of that at all. I should tell you something. When you run from something, it means you don't like it. And they did not even mention, we'll get into it here, the significance of the highlighted sections for Commissioners Wingate's and Mears' statements for their votes. Why did they run from the record? I submit because deep down they know this record cannot be upheld on appeal. Now perhaps today, I saw the slides, I shared my slides with them, they shared their slides with us. So maybe today they will try to embrace what I've highlighted in yellow, we'll see. But if that's their move, if that's, now they're going to pivot from their reply, from their answering briefs and embrace their stated reasons, then we're right back to where we argued in our notice of appeal. The Planning and Zoning Commission, not its counsel, fine man and fine lawyer, but the Planning and Zoning Commission, not its lawyer, is the body that's charged by statute and by Delaware law with reviewing and voting on applications, making findings, conclusions of code compliance, and stating their reasons, not somebody else's reasons, their reasons for the decision so that you can review it. Indeed, the code specifically requires that the Planning and Zoning Commission should act. The Planning and Zoning Commission should review. The Planning and Zoning Commission should decide. And we submit the Planning and Zoning Commission cannot simply abdicate its duties by simply delegating them to staff and council because it's convenient, or because that's the way we've always done it. Phrase I dislike. Remember the admonition, we cited this case in our opening brief, from the Delaware Supreme Court in the Tony Ashburn case. Delaware Supreme Court, Tony Ashburn case. That said, a planning commission most certainly has a measure of discretion. A planning commission most certainly has a measure of discretion, and they cannot simply rubber stamp an application such as this. We submit the Planning and Zoning Commission's discretion must be exercised, not abdicated. Exercised, not abdicated. And that here the Planning and Zoning Commission simply rubber stamped what their attorney told them to do without making any independent determinations of their own. This is not a check-the-box exercise. What was Shell's and the Planning and Zoning Commission's direct response in their briefs to our argument that the Planning and Zoning Commission failed to comply with your remand instructions by failing to further consider the entire record, all evidence and facts of the application in open session, and to issue a written decision containing findings and conclusions consistent with law? I submit zero, zero direct response to our argument because there is none. There is nothing in the record. We'll show you. Here's what happened. There's nothing in the record that indicates that the Planning and Zoning Commission actually considered in open session the motion. Read verbally, 11 minutes. So moved, seconded, vote, bam. No discussion, no consideration. And with regard to the written decision that you asked, or requested on remand, there's no written decision of the Planning and Zoning Commission at all. They point to a June 24th notice of decision. That wasn't signed by the Planning Commission, wasn't adopted by them, and it simply lists some conditions. It does not identify the reasons for the vote. So what do they do? What do they do in their briefs? Like an illusionist, they say, don't pay attention to what actually happened. Don't pay attention to the actual candid unscripted reasons of the Planning and Zoning Commission members. Instead, look over here. Let's look at what we, the lawyers, did. A counsel's verbal motion, which took 11 minutes to read. It spans 11 pages on the transcript. Let's take a look at a notice of decision. That's not a decision at all. Let's take a look at a pre-remand record, they say. Of course, that pre-remand record resulted in a denial the application. So clearly, it cannot automatically result in an approval. Moreover, the case law is clear that their attempts to muddy the record, to confuse you, can only strengthen our argument that remand is necessary. You, on appeal, you should not be forced to speculate as to the reasons of the Planning and Zoning Commissioners for their June 23rd vote. We think it's pretty clear, and we'll get into it, we think it's pretty clear why they voted the way they did. But if you're confused, and if they confuse you, then the only thing you can do under Delaware law is to remand, because the Delaware case law we cite in our briefs make it clear that the Planning and Zoning Commission, in this instance, must state their reasons, and they have to be clear and not muddied. You are the governing body of Sussex County. You can remand the Planning Commission's June 23rd decision, as you did with the prior decision. Indeed, we submit that you must. And you, not Planning and Zoning Commission's counsel, not Shell, is in charge of what happens next. So where are we? As we argued in our reply brief and our open brief, the Planning and Zoning Commissioners are required and were required by Delaware case law to state their reasons for their votes on June 23rd. They were required to state their reasons for the votes on June 23rd. Delaware law requires it. The reason for that is to enable you to do a meaningful review on appeal. You and your remand order of May 24 required it, stating the reasons for their votes. And nothing in that remand order, by the way, says they only have to state the reasons for the vote. If it's a no vote, that's not what your remand order says. State your reasons, one way or the other. Counsel for Planning and Zoning Commission understood that. He specifically directed on the 23rd, he specifically directed the commissioners to state your reasons for your vote. Yes or no. Not just no. Yes or no. And they did so. And that's what they did. They stated their reasons on the record. So let's take a look at what they actually said. We'll get into it here. Not the lawyer's post hoc rationalizations, not the lawyer's verbal motion that was not debated in open session, and not the notice of decision that the Planning and Zoning Commission did not sign or adopt. Let's look at the actual reasons for the June 23rd vote. At least 3 votes out of 5 were directly based on instructions from the Planning and Zoning Commission's counsel rather than an independent judgment of the commissioners themselves. Let's look at Commissioner Stevens. Commissioner Stevenson abstained because, quote, because I was told what our counsel said was that we can't deny it. That statement, I submit, could hardly be clearer. And again, in their briefs, what's their response? Crickets. Silence. Nothing. They hate that statement. Let's look up Commissioner Mears, who had previously voted against the application in March, and now stated, quote, unquote, unfortunately, I'm a yes because, quote, pay very careful attention, as counsel explained, it complies with the subdivision code and the zoning code, and therefore I vote yes based on the reasons in the motion. At most, Commissioner Mears' statement reflects counsel's determination of code compliance, not Commissioner Mears. As counsel explained it, it complies. That's the statement. How about Commissioner Wingate? Mr. Chair, I am a yes because of the extensive explanation by counsel. By the way, counsel doesn't vote. He's not a member of the Planning and Zoning Commission. He doesn't get a vote. Sometimes commissioners will adopt the reasons given by another voting member. Right? Sometimes that happens. Counsel for the Planning and Zoning Commission doesn't vote. He just provides legal advice. You can't adopt the reasons of a non-voting member. Moreover, Commissioner Wingate says, I voted yes because of the extensive application by counsel and the condition imposed. The condition imposed. That's not a finding or determination of code compliance. Condition imposed is not a finding of code compliance. Once you've made a decision of code compliance, you can attach conditions that are consistent with the spirit and intent of the code. But a condition imposed is not a finding of code compliance. These three people, these three commissioners, three out of five, did not make their own independent determination of code compliance. It is clear and unambiguous from this record. Now, we submit that record cannot stand on appeal before you. The June 23rd vote was not the result of an orderly and logical review of the evidence and the applicable provisions of the subdivision ordinance by the commissioners. The commissioners voted the way they did because their attorney told them they can't deny the application. Because the lawyer made the key finding of code compliance. And they just did a 180 from their prior vote in March and turned it down. Now, it's okay for a lawyer to explain what the law is. Judge Tolliver, when he was giving jury instructions to a jury, would tell a jury what the law is. But lawyers and judges don't tell the people who are voting how to apply the law. That's their job, not the judges, not their lawyers. That's their job, and they didn't exercise it. And this matters. This matters, folks. This is not some sort of arcane argument. This is not how government is supposed to work. It's contrary to the language in your code, contrary to the admonition by the Delaware Supreme Court in the Tony Ashburn case, and it's contrary to any notion of good government. In fact, ask yourselves, why even have a zoning commission? Why even have a zoning commission if they're just going to rubber stamp what staff and their council tell them to do? That's idiotic. It's silly. It cannot be. We think the record is clear in this. You must remand, and you should ask yourself, I respectfully submit, why is the Planning and Zoning Commission, why is Shell fighting so hard to prevent you from remanding this matter back so we can get a clearer understanding so that the entire community, a lot of people here today, as to really what exactly happened? Why did they do a 180? What really caused them to change their decision from a no to a yes? Is there something else going on here? I should hope that you would want to know the answer to that question. And there's only one way to find out. Remand. Remand. You are the senior representatives of Sussex County government. I again respectfully submit, you should ask yourself, how do you want the Planning and Zoning Commission decisions to be made? Are you comfortable with this record? From a 4-1 against to a 3-1-1 in favor simply because their attorney said you can't deny it? And otherwise made determinations of code compliance for them. And I submit respectfully that a court would not be comfortable with this record. So remand. So let's dig in a little bit deeper into the arguments that the Planning and Zoning Commission and Shell make in their briefs, which do not stand up to any scrutiny, I submit. First, they say they rely on the June 23rd verbal motion. Now that motion is still not written. It took 11 minutes and 11 pages to read into the record by the Planning and Zoning Commission's counsel for whoever wanted to make it, he said. For whoever, I'm going to read an 11-minute motion for whoever wants to make it. Immediately after it was read, so moved, seconded, vote. No debate. And most importantly for you, no discussion as to the reasons why they were voting the way they were going to vote, or consideration of the evidence, or consideration of the record, or consideration of applicable law other than that. The motion could not possibly have been considered in open session. Look what happened. This motion could not possibly have, it was just read for 11 minutes, very quickly. It could not possibly have been considered in open session. It's impossible. Now perhaps it was discussed in executive session or private session, but then you got a FOIA problem. And that's also directly contrary to your own remand that it be considered and reviewed in open session as FOIA requires. And I've seen the argument, and maybe they'll make it again today, that, lawyers read motions into the record all the time. That may be, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about, did the commissioners independently articulate their reasons for their votes? You have to look at what actually happened here. Next, the pre-remand record, they, in order to save the June 23rd vote, they rely on the pre-remand record. You remanded on May 24th. Let's take a look at the pre-remand record. But of course, that record resulted in the Planning and Zoning Commission denying the application in March. And of course, this council, more importantly, specifically ordered the Planning and Zoning Commission, or remand, to conduct a further consideration of the entire record, all evidence and facts of this application, again, in open session. And the cases that we cited, I submit, make it clear that you cannot uphold this decision based on the attorney's post hoc rationalizations, based on a record that they interpret in their briefs, and on a motion they read that was not debated, and on a notice of a decision that's really not a decision at all. But most importantly, if there's one thing I want you to remember today, you do not have to speculate as to really what was going on. If there's any doubt in your mind as to really what was going on, why did they do a 180? Why did they suddenly turn it down? If you have any doubt whatsoever, you must remand. That's what the Delaware case law that we cite submits. And as to the June 24 notice of decision, that doesn't say the June 23rd vote. Again, it's not a decision. Normally, when a public body issues a decision like you asked them to issue, they sign it and adopt it. June 24 notice of decision does not even purport to be an actual decision. It's a post hoc notice of decision that doesn't state the reasons for the decision. It simply lists the conditions of approval. It's not signed by the commissioners, as you would expect. It does not contain any findings of code compliance. And we submit that the June 23rd decision did not comply with your May 24 remand instruction, that the Planning and Zoning Commission conduct a further review of the entire record, all evidence and facts of this application in open session. Again, it simply did not happen. And I think that the Planning and Zoning Commission shall realize that it did not happen. If you look at their briefs, they say things, you got to look at the vote in this whole context, and maybe they sort of implicitly meant, it's in their briefs. Once you go there, you're conceding it didn't happen. Once you go there, you're conceding it didn't happen. Now, it is in this context that we raise an appeal whether the commission, rather than its lawyer, actually made a really important determination regarding code compliance, and that is whether Shell's application complied with applicable law that was enacted in 2021, the so-called superior design requirements. Now, the application was filed on November 25, 2020, and it's not filed by Shell Brothers, but rather by Double DVLP. And Shell now admits in its papers that it had not been recertified. Its application is a 2021 number, not a 2020 number. And the record is devoid of any analysis by the Planning and Zoning Commission, at least by a majority, or anybody other than their lawyer, that this impacts, or whether this fact impacts which version of the code should apply to the application, 2020 or 2021. Our argument on appeal, just to be clear before they jump up and start screaming, is the record of this decision does not indicate that the commissioners made that key finding of code compliance, consistent with our argument. I'm not taking a position one way or the other on the merits of that argument. I'm saying the record does not support that the commission made a finding of that key determination. And finally, the June 23rd decision did not comply with the remand requirement that the Planning and Zoning Commission issue a written decision containing findings and conclusions that are consistent with law. Again, my final minute or two before I reserve 5 minutes, let me close with this. Good government and Delaware law requires more, respectfully, than what the Planning and Zoning Commission did on June 23rd. Regardless of how busy they are, regardless of how many of these things they have coming through the pikes, they have to do their job. The Planning and Zoning Commission must make independent findings of fact and conclusions of law regarding code compliance. Their decisions, not somebody else's. Now, subdivision approval is not a check-the-box exercise, remember Tony Ashford. It's an important decision, especially in Sussex County, given the amount of development in Sussex County. Now, some people say there's nothing people can do, there's nothing government can do to regulate development. That's not true. At a very minimum, there's one thing that you can do. You can insist that the Planning and Zoning Commission actually comply with your remand order. And you can insist that the Planning and Zoning Commission comply with Delaware law and the code and state their reasons for their vote and exercise their discretion rather than advocate. Thank you.
How do you wish to respond? Do you wish to reserve, Mr. Robertson?
Your Honor, it was my understanding that we were going to let both appellants go first, and then just for everybody's benefit, I was going to speak next, addressing both appellants, and then Shell, I think, was going to speak however they're going to.
That was my recollection as well, but I wasn't sure you were going to stick to that.
Honor, that's how we were approaching.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Bartley?
Sorry, Your Honor, I wouldn't stand up on the cranberry. Good morning, and I'm very sorry for being late this morning. Judge Tolliver, President Vincent, Councilman and Councilwoman, I am Terry Bartley, and as you know, I have appealed the Planning and Zoning Commission's decision of approval of Shell Brothers' application for Coral Lakes. Given the Council is well acquainted with the facts of the application and the procedural requirements of this appeal, only the arguments of each ground of appeal will be provided. The Commission failed to provide adequate notice. Sussex County Code 99, Section 99A in the Delaware Code 96812 regulated Coral Lakes public hearing notice as follows. Any public hearing required by this chapter shall be held within the county and notice of time and place thereof shall be published in two newspapers of general circulation in the county. Notice shall be published in at least 15 days before the date of the hearing. In addition, notice of the hearing shall be posted on the property itself. The notice shall state the place at which the text and maps relating to proposed change may be examined. The record of the hearing for Coral Lakes has affidavits for the placement of two advertisements. Neither advertisement states the place at which the text and maps relating to the proposed change may be examined. Delaware Supreme Court Chief Justice Herman, in a 1982 land case, stated, the objective of the required notice is to announce the purpose, dates, and times of the hearings, describe the area to be subdivided, and advise the public its right to inspect the relevant documents in advance and its right to be heard at the hearings. For the public to avail themselves of their rights, specifically to inspect the relevant documents in advance, it is imperative for them to know where the documents are located. Chief Justice Harriman, in the same case, continued by declaring that the use of the word shall in the notice statute indicates the legislative intent requiring mandatory compliance. The enabling statute must be strictly followed. Council must apply the strictly adhered to standard and find that the Commission, by failing to strictly adhere to 99, Section 99A of the Sussex County Code and 6812, the Delaware Code, resulted in the improper interpretation and application of this county code. The Commission's advertisements wording, additional information pertaining to the applications may be reviewed online at sussexcountyde.gov prior to the meeting, does not meet the requirement of 9 DC Section 6812. The website sussexcountyde.gov is not a place. A website does not address the part of the public who do not have internet access. The website is a large website. To attempt to comply, the Commission would at least have to give and ULR address. Just as buildings have a street address, web pages also have unique addresses to help people locate them. The required property sign of the hearing states, text and maps of this application may be examined at the County Administrative Office building. The required newspaper advertisements for the hearing states, additional information pertaining to the application may be reviewed online at sussexcountyde.gov prior to the meeting. Logically, the Commission cannot claim there are two different places at which the text and maps relating to the proposed subdivision may be examined. One of the notices must be in error. Given that Planning and Zoning Department is an actual place, then the advertisements reviewed online must be in error. Appellant Hicks' testimony raised the issue that the notice did not comply with 6812. The following passages of Appellant Hicks' testimony from the transcripts of the hearing states, and even the differences in the site plan on the file at P&Z
could be requested at December 18th, 9 days ago, and the plan provided to the public in the online packet 3 days later on January 21st, of which there were changes made. Therefore, we request the current plus review be performed. Clearly, 6812 requires one place where the public can review all the documents relating to a subdivision. The commission cannot have multiple locations with different documents in each location where the text and maps relating to the proposed subdivision may be examined. Ms. Hicks notifies the commission that the documents located in the planning and zoning office are different than the documents contained on the online packet. As a matter of fact, the majority of the online packet, hundreds of pages, is still not on file at the planning and zoning office. Given that the council's decision must be based on the record, I hope council takes the time to go through the official record from planning and zoning, and you can determine quite easily what pages of the online packet are not included. The right to inspect the relevant documents in advance of the hearings is governed by 6812. By setting the time frame of the meeting of in advance as at least 15 days before the date of the hearing. Clearly, the Delaware legislature would not require a notice date to place at which the text and maps relating to the proposed change may be examined, and not require the documents be there. That would have the public inspecting the documents which do not accurately reflect the subdivision application. The commission is not free to arbitrarily set a date shorter than 15 days. Ms. Hicks notifies the commission that the online packet was only available to the public for 7 days before the hearing. Given the applicant had over a year to prepare a record of support, fundamental fairness would require they make available to the public the online packet, which was a 276-page report within the statutory required 15 days. In summary, there were three locations where the text and maps were located for Coral Lakes. First, the official record located in Planning and Zoning Office. As stated above, it does not contain hundreds of pages of the online packet. Clearly, it is not compliance with Section 99A. Secondly, online, where the planning and zoning agenda was located. From Ms. Hicks' testimony, we know this was only available 7 days before the hearing, clearly not in compliance with Section 99A. Thirdly, the online land use docket. This is the only location online that had Coral Lakes listed on when the Cape Gazette ad was published and when the statutory 15-day period passed. Unfortunately, there was no text and maps listed. I visited the site several times before the hearing to review the information. There was never any information listed, clearly not in compliance with Section 99A. The Commission's failure to provide proper notice was a fundamental error. The fundamental error doctrine is an exception to the rule that issues cannot be raised for the first time on appeal. Given land use has constitutional protections, notice requirements would be a matter of due process. In fact, courts had said the fundamental error must be equivalent to the denial of due process. All wetlands simply means all wetlands. The applicant, when deciding to develop these parcels, understood that wetlands would be the defining feature of this application. The Coral Lakes is a cluster subdivision application which are governed by code section 11525. Logically, the applicant would look to the code 11525 to find the regulations which govern wetlands. Wetlands for cluster subdivisions are regulated by code 11525E. Design requirements for cluster development states that all lots should be configured to be contained completely outside of all wetlands. The applicant should then develop a record of substantial evidence to support the commission's findings of fact. The applicant did not mention, consider, or develop evidence for the application complying with code 11525E in its record of support. There is no evidence that the commission mentioned, considered, or developed evidence for finding the application complied with code 11525E in the record of support. Commission gave no evidence to support the notion that the meaning of code 11525E, all wetlands, only included jurisdictional wetlands. The applicant's counsel made the false argument that all wetlands only applies to definition of wetlands containing 11593. Buffer zones are wetlands in tidal and perennial non-tidal waters. However, 11593 states, definitions as used in this section, the following terms shall have the meanings indicated. The applicant's process is identifying and excluding non-jurisdictional wetlands should only be utilized when applying buffer regulations and should not be applied to cluster development regulations. The county council regulates land use in Sussex County, not the federal government. Any federal regulation should be enforced in addition to the zoning code regulations and not in place of. The Army Corps of Engineers approved jurisdictional demarcation lists three wetlands. Wetland C, 12.75 acres, Wetland D, 5.31 acres, and Wetland E, 0.3 acres. The applicant's record of support shows upwards of 18.36 acres of non-jurisdictional wetlands. On page 6 of the plus review, Beth Primine from DENREC stated, the newest project application proposed to disturb fill upwards of 25 acres of non-tidal wetlands. These non-tidal wetlands provide significant flood attenuation, water quality benefits, and habitat for plants and animal species. Filling these wetlands areas, then building homes and infrastructure upon them will directly result in an adverse drainage and flooding impacts for future residents. DENROC is a state agency charged through the PLUS process to give recommendations concerning the environment and wetlands specifically. DENROC gives the Commission evidence that the required design element 11525E design requirement for cluster developments states that all lots shall be configured to be contained completely outside of all wetlands will not be met. The Commission is not free to ignore this testimony. They must on the record give the reason why they did not agree with the testimony. The record has no evidence the Commission considered the code after Mr. Stevens brought it to their attention. The Commission did not address DENREC's submission that filling these wetlands areas, then building homes and infrastructure upon them will directly result in adverse drainage and flooding impacts for future residents. This resulted in the improper interpretation and application of the Sussex County Code 11525E. The record fails to affirm the application follows the code. The Commission failed to follow Code Section 998B. The Code 998B requires that the preliminary plat shall be checked by the staff to determine its conformity with the county's official zoning map, other pertinent features of the comprehensive plan of the county, applicable zoning and other regulations, and the design principles and standards and requirements for the plat submission as set forth in this chapter. The planning and zoning staff prepared a review to comply with the preliminary plat shall be checked by the staff, requirement of Code 998. In the staff review letter of the review, the Planning and Zoning Planner 3 notified the applicant and the Commission that the preliminary site plan did not contain a grading plan and an easement for the site plan. The issue of Code 998 not being satisfied was raised by the Planning and Zoning Planner 3 as part of a statutory process. The applicant in the response to the staff review stated that for the site plan will be completed in the stated for the site plan for the easements and the grading will be completed in the final site plan. The grading plan and the easements are required elements of the preliminary site plan. There is only one logical conclusion. The applicant's record of support through the response does not comply with the subdivision code. There is no evidence in the record that the planner or staff received response. There is no evidence in the record that the planner or staff made any determinations concerning the applicant's assertions that they cured the identified deficiencies. The Commission's counsel addressed the importance of this step at the first appeal of Coeur d'Alene. Mr. Robertson pointed out that you must then have staff review. The argument is that if the plat is compliant, it must be approved. Mr. Robertson explained that you are not able to just take someone's word that it is compliant. There has to be a staff review and occurs to ensure that the plat submitted is compliant with the county subdivision code. Based on the record, one must conclude that the Commission, the director, and the staff just accepted the applicant's word that the plat submitted was compliant. By an act of omission, the staff did not ensure the plan complied with zoning and subdivision code. The Commission, in their motion to approve the plan, included condition S. The final site plan shall include a grading plan for the site. The Commission concurred with the applicant that the preliminary plat does not have to be required grading plan. Conditions placed on subdivision approvals are intended as reasonable conditions which the Planning Commission may impose in order to minimize an adverse impact on nearby landowners and residents. Conditions are not intended as curative measures to address any plat deficiencies of specific criteria found in an ordinance. The mere fact the Commission required the applicant to include a grading plan in the final site plan shows the plan is not in compliance with 998B. The Commission's failure to hold a fair and orderly public hearing. For an application that has had a lot of controversy, there is one thing everyone agrees on: when the record was closed. All four parties, the Commission, the Council, the applicant, and current appellant, agree that the record was closed on January 27, 2022. In Council's resolution remanding the application back to the Commission, the Council instructed the Commission to further consider the entire record, all evidence and facts of this application in open session, to consult with their legal counsel. to take a public vote thereon and instructions that clearly state the record reasons in support of the commission's vote. The commission, as at its June 23, 2020 meeting, included Coral Lakes as an agenda item to comply with the council's instructions. First up at the meeting was the commission's legal counsel's consultation with the commission concerning the application. This consultation comprised 6 pages of transcribed testimony to discuss the well-settled law on subdivisions in Delaware. This discussion reviewed 8 citations of court cases, the Delaware Code, the Zoning Code, the Subdivision Code, the Commission's Rules of Procedure. The Commission's counsel discourse ended with, so again, in summary, under well-established Delaware law, if a subdivision satisfies the requirements of the Zoning Code, the Subdivision Code, then it must be approved. Next up was to take the public vote thereon based on the entire record. However, there was a problem. The plan must satisfy the requirements of the Zoning Code and the Subdivision Code, so it can fulfill the if-then condition of the council's summary above. As previously established, there was an evidentiary defect in that the record is void of any oral or written presentation that the rector or the staff determined the plan conformed with the Zoning and Subdivision Code. At the conclusion of counsel's remark, he stated the following. So based upon the law that I have described, I now ask Mr. Whitehouse to confirm for the record, emphasis added, whether subdivision 212006 for Coral Lakes complies with the subdivision and zoning code. Mr. Whitehouse replied, and it does, Mr. Chairman. The bulk area, open space density, and buffer requirements within Chapter 115 are complied with, and the design requirements in Chapter 99 are also met. Council's question and answer session with the director was clearly a curative step to address the evidential defect in the record. But at what cost? Now there is procedural defect in the evidence as added to the record. After it was clearly closed, in a twist of irony, the director's declaration that the application complied with the code outside the record must be construed as an admission that he never confirmed the application conformed with the code on the record. Council instructed commission to consult with their council. The council consults that if the application complies with the zoning and subdivision code, they must approve it. Then the council has director outside the record confirm the plan does not comply with the zoning code. It does comply with the zoning and subdivision code. Given these set of circumstances, one must conclude that the procedural error was fatal to the application and that the council and director's actions were prejudicial to the application receiving a fair and orderly and logical review. The commission, by allowing and considering evidence presented outside the public hearings record, allowed for a decision that was not the result of an orderly and logical review of the evidence. Appellate Bartley is given standing by Title 9, Delaware Chapter, Section 6811. Title 9 of the Delaware Code, Section 6811, gives the residents of Sussex County an explicitly created right of action to challenge a site plan approval by the Sussex County Planning and Zoning to the Sussex County Council. Delaware Code Section 6811 states, any approval or disapproval of subdivision application may appeal to the county government within 30 days of the official action of the county government. The commission and applicant failed to recognize this fact when citing cases to challenge Appellant Bartley's standing. The primary case cited by the appellant's counsel was Citizen for Smyrna, Clayton First. Smyrna is a municipality and is not governed by Delaware Code 6811. Applicant's counsel failed to take note of a key element of the master's report for Citizens for Smyrna's Clayton First, which they supplied with their written submission. Council has that readily available for them to review. On page 5, the master found that Smyrna residents have no explicitly created right of action to challenge a site plan approved by the town council. Further on page 5, the master report continues. The standing test applicable to cases where, as in this challenge to the actions of town council, the plaintiff seeks review of a decision without any statutory right of appeal. The plaintiff must demonstrate an interest distinguishable from the general public's interest. Given that Delaware Code 6811 gives the residents of Sussex County an explicitly created right of action to challenge a site plan approval by Sussex County Planning and Zoning to the Sussex County Council, Sussex County residents have a statutory right of appeal. Therefore, Sussex County residents do not have to demonstrate an interest distinguishable from the general public interest in subdivision appeals before council. I will cite Citizens for Smyrna Clayton First. Again, applicants' counsel failed to take note of a key element of the master's report for Citizens of Smyrna Clayton First, which they supplied with their written submissions. Once again, council has readily available to them to review the applicant's case cited submission. On page 7, the master found. The plaintiffs alleged the town, in failing to follow certain procedures set out by ordinance, deprived them of the right of due process, a claim which confers standing to seek redress in this court. The master cites Couch versus Demalver Power and Light and Company. Thus, with respect to those claims, the plaintiffs are entitled to determination on the merits. I will cite Citizens for Smyrna Clayton. First, appellant alleges the commission deprived him of his due process of notice by not following the notice of procedures of Sussex County Code 99A and Delaware Code 96812. Determinations. Based on these findings and declarations and review of the record, counsel's only logical determination of the commission's decisions was not a result of an orderly and logical view of the evidence and involved improper interpretation and application of zoning and subdivision code. Given these errors, counsel's only just and reasonable course of action is to reverse the commission's decision approved for Coral Lakes. Thank you for your time.
Do you reserve time for rebuttal?
Yes, reserve my time, please.
Yes. We're going to take a very short 5-minute recess, please. If that's okay with you.
Yeah. It's up to you. We need a motion, Mr. Moore.
Yes.
Entertain a motion to do a 5-minute recess.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Hudson. Second, Mrs. Green. Question on a motion. Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer. Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
I will, yes, run out a 5-minute recess.